Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It is Black Friday. It's Thanksgiving weekend. All brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar. Live by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Six great flavors of slushies, and it's the holiday season. So now, think about Brewers Outlet gift cards. They make a tremendous gift. Nice one-stop shopping. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. One of the tough highlights of the weekend in our play-by-play call of the day, an outstanding rookie quarterback, Joe Burrow, goes down with a season-ending injury.
And after gaining 7 yards on the first play, Joe Burrow is down.
Joe's hurt.
And he's grabbing his left knee, and he's in pain.
Oh, God. Allen, I think, put the hit on him. Looks like Joe Burrow's in trouble.
The biggest nightmare for Bengals fans this season was an injury to rookie quarterback Joe Burrow, and he was in serious pain.
So awful when that happens. That's one thing we said about Joe Burrow early in the season, and it maintained all the way through. Joe Burrow gave the Bengals a fighter's chance in every game. He will be back next year. All right. With that, we bring in the head football coach of the Nittany Lions, James Franklin. James, first of all, not only welcome to the show, but to you, Fumi, Shola, Addy, the Penn State football family, the Penn State football fan base, happy Thanksgiving.
You as well, Steve. You know, even during a challenging 2020, we all have so much to be thankful for and to, you know, that we're blessed with. And I think it's important for all of us to remember that. And I'm preaching to myself right now as well.
And the other part too is thankful for the great fan base that Penn State has, 110,000 strong. Once we get back to Beaver Stadium, because they've been a critical part of what's of the success that's happened here at Penn State.
No, that's exactly right. You know, I was saying last week, you know, driving to the stadium, I was talking with Coach before the game, and just, you know, driving to the stadium is surreal. It really is this year. You know, pulling up to the stadium, walking into the stadium, doing my normal lap around the stadium. It's very strange. It's very surreal. You know, so it's going to be unbelievable when we can get everybody back together for another family reunion.
Right. I'm going to ask you a question now I haven't asked you since your first 2 years, because let's face it, when you've won 42 games over a four-year span, that includes a Big Ten championship, includes a Cotton Bowl win, includes a Fiesta Bowl win, and so forth, you probably have been pretty close, I'm going to guess, to coaching the way you wanted to coach games. When you're in a situation like this, going back even to your first 2 years, when the circumstances were different, what does that do for some of the decisions you have to make because the circumstances are so different with a particular team?
Well, I think what you're doing is you're trying to find ways to give your team momentum, to find an edge. So you probably take a little bit more risk to try to push yourself through this, you know, and that has happened, you know, this year for sure. We went into the season, you know, doing a lot of studies with analytics groups, and, you know, the analytics people think you should pretty much go for it on every fourth down. So we went into it with a mentality, wanted to be a little bit more aggressive this year. But as the season has gone, obviously, and we've had our struggles, not just on offense, but in offense and defense, you know, I felt like, you know, we needed to take a few risks, and, you know, you make a play and get some momentum going and build some confidence, you know, that can help you. But obviously when it doesn't work, You know, that there's challenges that come with that as well. So, but it definitely impacts, you know, your decision making throughout a game, and your flow. You know, when it works, it's a great decision. When it doesn't work, it puts you, in some more challenging and difficult circumstances.
A quick reminder for everybody, Sean Clifford was a quarterback a year ago that had 23 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions, a better than 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. When you've looked at what's happened in certain turnover situations, how many are unforced errors? How many are pretty good plays by the defense? Because the other guy can obviously make plays too.
Yeah, it's a mix of both. And, you know, with Sean, what I tried to kind of study is, you know, why is this happening? Where is this happening? And what can we do to help him? And, you know, it really, to be honest with you, it really started at the end of last year, you know, from the Minnesota game on. This has been a little bit of an issue, and we were able to overcome it with so many big plays last year, you know, on offense, defense, and even on special teams. So, you know, that was part of my decision making, you know, last week about, you know, making a change. You know, but we had similar, you know, we had really kind of a similar response, you know, with the change. We still had the turnover. So, you know, Sean has done some really good things here, and he practices extremely well, and he's made a bunch of big plays. So, you know, we just got to find that point where he can play confident, but still protect the football. And the same with Will. You know, we really feel like we're going to need them both.
All right. We always talk about injuries, but you did mention in your post-game press conference some of the issues with that along the way. How has that tested your depth, and how much has that tested the youth in that depth?
Well, it really has. I mean, again, you look at the running back position. We came into the season with thinking that, you know, we maybe have the best running back room in the country, and then we lose Journey Brown and Noah Kane by the second series of the first game of the season. We don't have either of those guys. And then last week, you know, we lose Devin. So now we're down to two true freshman running backs that, you know, we didn't think we're going to play much this year, you know. So obviously there's challenges that come with that. That's not just at that position. There's multiple positions like that. We haven't had Tariq Castro Fields for a couple of weeks. There's a number of guys, you know. Obviously, I made the announcement about Pat Freiermuth. So again, once again, that tight end room was a real strength in our program. And now, you know, Theo Johnson was able to get in there and do some things for us and did some nice things for us on Saturday. So it's been a challenge. You know, there's no doubt about it. This 2020, I think, has brought, you know, significant challenges to everyone and some programs more than others.
I want to ask you about the two young running backs for a moment, Kevon Lee and Keziah Holmes. What do you see their potential, James, and what have you seen so far in the practical experience of having games?
Yeah, you know, I think what you see is, you know, early on it's, you know, trying to get them to, you know, understand how important ball security is. It's trying to get them to understand all the different protection responsibilities they have. And when I say, you know, protecting the ball, I think, you know, the difference is in high school, they were just so much bigger and faster and stronger than everybody that nobody really could get to them to get to the ball. Where at this level, you know, the guys are athletic, big, strong, and they're ripping at the ball. And the guys that are ripping at the ball are strong or stronger than them. So it's just very different transition. So early on, it was getting them to understand those things. And then once you get through that, then, you know, hopefully they can, you know, stop focusing so much on that where it comes more natural to them. It's more their instincts. And now just go play, you know, and try to make plays rather than, you know, playing with a mindset that you don't want to, you know, make a mistake or you don't want to miss a protection, you know, those types of things. So, you know, it's getting them so confident that their natural ability can just come out and they can just go play freely and confident.
When you go max protect, are they getting better in that area where they can help out a quarterback, pick up a blitz, things like that?
Yeah, it's consistency, and that's pretty much you know, our entire team. It's consistency. They've done some good things, but they have to do it time and time again. You look at us, you know, last week on defense, you know, we had some series, some drives that we were impressive with three and outs and playing really good football, but we weren't consistent with it. Same thing with the offense. You know, we did some, you know, really good things, whether it was a long drive or whether it was explosive plays, but we got to be more consistent for four quarters.
All right, Coach, we talked about the offense. Let's get to the defense. Are they doing a good job? Let's start with the basic. Are they doing a good job, in your opinion, when you watch the tapes of, quote, keeping the ball in front of them?
Yeah, I think at times, you know, we've been better there. You know, we really have. Again, it's about consistency across the board, you know, with the front seven, on the back end as well. It's playing fast. It's playing confident. It's putting yourself in position to make plays. So it's, you know, it's really about consistency with us.
All right. Shaka Toney, after the game, was asked about the locker room, and he said, "No, our locker room's pretty tight." You're around them as often as you can be. When Shaka says something like that, what does that mean to you as a coach?
Well, I think what he's saying, I mean, obviously, you know, people are going to ask a lot of different questions to try to, you know, figure out and make sense of, you know, the temperature of this team. And, you know, I've been proud of them. You know, these are really challenging times for a lot of different reasons on these guys. And, you know, they have stuck together. They have tried to be as positive as they possibly can be. And they've also been reflective in areas that we need to be better. That's all of us. You know, when we win, you know, we want to make sure that everybody understands that they had a critical role in this. That's the trainers, it's the doctors, it's the managers, it's the players, it's the coaches, it's everybody. We're all in this thing together, the fans. And the reality is, you know, when we lose, it's the same way. It's easy to point fingers. It's easy to point blame. But you got to start, you know, kind of looking at yourself. And that's kind of how we try to approach everything and learn from it and grow from it and find a way to get better so we got a chance to win this week.
Oftentimes, obviously, assumptions are made from the outside looking in at any situation. And those inside look around and say, no, that's not really the reality. And obviously a football team happens to be one of them. How difficult is it to control outside noise, pro or con?
Yeah, I think that's you know, always a factor, you know, at a place like Penn State. These big, massive schools that have tremendous pride and have tremendous passion about their team. It is, you know, the greatest blessing, but it's also one of the big challenges. You know, when things are going well, our guys are getting patted on the back like crazy, and they need to kind of tune that out and not listen to that so that we can handle success. But obviously that same passion can turn in the other direction. And I wish that was not the case. I really do. And I will say this, it's amazing how many emails that I get from people that are, you know, just truly supportive, you know, no matter the results. And part of that is based on, you know, what we have done, you know, since our time coming here. Part of that is based on how we've conducted ourselves both on and off the field and represented Penn State the way people want it represented. I think that's really important to our fan base. But there's also the opposite. You know, there's also the opposite that we've seen in college sports and that we've seen at Penn State. And I wish that was not the case, but it is. You know, it is, you know, part of it. And you know, making sure that we can tune it out as much as we possibly can. But it doesn't help anything. You know, it doesn't help our team. It doesn't help our staff. It doesn't help recruiting. It doesn't help anything. You know, for us, you know, we're gonna stay positive and we're gonna try to get better. And I can guarantee you there's nobody that's working harder to try to fix these things than the men in that locker room.
Jack and I have felt during the course of the last couple of broadcasts, we've been mentioning the name Hakeem Beamon more and more. What have you seen in the development of the redshirt freshman?
Yeah, he's a very explosive guy. You know, he really can, you know, he's one of the more twitchy, you know, defensive linemen that we have. You know, can explode off the ball, you know, can run, can change direction, all those types of things. So he's a, you know, he's an exciting young prospect that we're excited about, and he's continuing to develop in all areas of his life, and he's going to need to continue to develop in all those areas. But we're very proud of him.
So I'm going to stick with another young prospect, and that's Curtis Jacobs. Obviously, in the initial stages of his career, what kind of progress has he made for you so far?
Yeah, you know, he's done a really good job on special teams for us. And in some ways, very similar to Brandon Smith last year, you know, is getting to rotate in and gain some valuable experience, you know, with defensive reps as well, and allow that to grow and allow his confidence to grow and get more comfortable because he's extremely athletic. So that's something I think is going to be really important, you know, for our future. But he can run and change direction. He's got really good ball skills. You know, so it's nice to see him, you know, gaining experience and continue to grow.
All right, so here comes one that's out of the COVID realm. The state of Michigan has put in certain executive orders along the way about gatherings and meals and so forth. Have you had to change how you're going to do this trip compared to what you and I would consider to be a normal Penn State road trip?
Yeah, we've had to change, you know, pretty much everything. So, you know, typically we go to the hotel, you know, fly there, go to the hotel, have all our meetings, have all our walkthroughs, have our meals, all those types of things, and we're not going to be able to do that. So we're gonna have to do all our meetings and meals and stuff here, and then fly later that evening, you know, to the hotel. Grab a meal to go in boxes and go to our rooms and sleep, wake up in the morning, go grab and go, you know, our meals in the morning and then go play the game. We're not going to be able to have any of the meetings. You're not allowed to do that. You know, Michigan will be able to because they're allowed to do it on their own campus, but not in the hotels either. So they'll just use all their own facilities for their meetings, then go sleep in the hotel and go from there. So it's just another hurdle that 2020 is offering to us. But again, at the end of the day, you know, we gotta, you know, be flexible and we gotta, you know, be able to adjust and make the best of it and find a way to turn it into a positive for us.
Very quickly on the nutrition part of it, though, there's a certain way that you want a team to eat. Andy wants them to eat. Wayne does. Everybody. Kayla Martin does. What does the grab and go mean in terms of the nutritional balance? I mean, this is for everybody across the country, but includes you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, those meals are important. You know, those Friday night meals are important for us. You know, throughout the entire season, and they're important for us not only from a nutritional perspective and making sure they're hydrated and making sure that they get enough calories into their system for what is a very challenging weekend. But there's also just the component of sitting there and breaking bread together, you know, as a team and as a family. And we've had, you know, just very little of that, you know, this year. You know, we have taken a very conservative approach when it comes to football, and you know, we've been very aggressive when it comes to COVID, and I think we've done a really good job of managing COVID so far. But you know, there's a lot of changes and a lot of things that we have done from a football perspective that is. Far away from our normal routine. But like I've told our parents and like I told our players and like I tell recruits, their safety and their health is going to be priority number one, and it always will be. And there's going to be challenges that come from with that.
Well, James, I'll go back to where I started, to you, your family, the Penn State football family, which includes everyone we're talking to right now. Happy Thanksgiving. Best of luck on Saturday.
You as well, Steve. Thank you so much. Everybody out there, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thank you for your continued support and positive influence. We appreciate it.
Head football coach James Franklin. Great to have you with us today on Thanksgiving weekend on Black Friday. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ed Sherman on his history of the Big Ten in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Thanksgiving weekend, this Black Friday. A lot of football going on today. In fact, Iowa and Nebraska playing today, as a matter of fact, in their traditional game. And it has become a traditional game to play on that Friday after Thanksgiving. I'm glad to see the Big Ten maintain that. But great to have you with us. And something that's a tradition is every Friday, Brewers Outlet Day. That's right. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, my favorites. Indeed, second to none, and six great flavors of slushies. And don't forget, okay, we're into the season now. Hey, we are officially into the holiday buying season. You're saying, okay, I need gift ideas. How about some gift cards from Brewers Outlet? Okay, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, great, great new inventory. The best and great deals to be had on each. And not only that, outstanding pre-owned inventory that they go over with a fine-tooth comb with that Sunbury Motors guarantee. Fabulous service department, great sales department, great deals to be had during this holiday season. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so let's talk about holiday gifts. Let's talk about Brewers Outlet gift cards. Maybe you're in the mood for a book. Ed Sherman, who for years has been such an outstanding writer at the Chicago Tribune, was asked to put together a book on the history of the Big Ten, which, of course, includes Penn State. We had Ed on earlier, and the first question I asked him, I said, Ed, the bottom line is, when you had to do something that goes back into the late 1800s,
How daunting a task was this?
You know, everyone's kind of asked me that, and I really didn't think it was that daunting because I had an approach. Obviously, there's a ton of history, and we go back all the way to 1895. And I think my approach was, and maybe this is what helped me, is that I kind of wanted to write what the Big Ten was all about and what made the Big Ten the Big Ten. And it really goes back a lot to the addition of Penn State. And when that happened in 1990, Jim Delaney was the new commissioner, and he had just started pretty much. He was in his first year. Didn't have that culture already, you know, ingrained in him about what the Big Ten was all about. And he threw it out there, okay, what are we going to, you know, 10, 11 schools, not the Big Ten anymore, what are we going to name the conference? And the reply was that we're not changing the name, it's still the Big Ten. Even from Penn State people said, we joined the Big Ten. We didn't join another conference. And and so I think that kind of, and he kind of realized that it wasn't a number, the Big Ten wasn't a number, it was a brand. It was something that represented, you know, a lot of things to a lot of people. And you know, foremost is that it's been the premier conference in college sports since the beginning. It was the first conference. And by many measurements, it still is the premier conference. And so I kind of used that as a starting point and kind of went from there to kind of tell the story. What's unique about the Big Ten as far as athletes and coaches and famous happenings? And so many firsts, you know, came from the Big Ten, including being the first conference, being the first conference that did a tie-in with a bowl game with the Rose Bowl, the first conference that really started this whole realignment thing, you know, where the map has dramatically changed with the addition of Penn State. You think about what seismic shift that was like. And then also the first conference to have their own network, and people said they were crazy. And, you know, obviously the Big Ten's getting the last laugh on that one. So that's where I started and then kind of went from there.
Yeah, believe me, I was there in 89 and 90 when Penn State joined, so I remember it was not actually the easiest route either for them to go, because I believe, if I recall correctly, the vote was 7-3.
7-3, right.
Yeah,
Steve, I'll give you a little history. We broke the story at the Chicago Tribune.
Right.
And it came so far out of left field. I mean, it was three counties out of left field.
Yeah.
My teammate Skip Mislinski came up to me and said, "You're not going to believe this." One of the athletic directors, I'm not going to say who, said that, "Can you believe that they're going to add Penn State to the Big Ten?" And I said, "What are you talking about? They're adding Penn State. They're adding Penn State's joined the Big Ten." And I'm like, "Okay, we got to check this out." So we made some phone calls. Sure enough, we got it confirmed, and it was led the whole newspaper. It was a big story, obviously, for not just you guys, for all of college sports concerning the magnitude of Penn State. And that was an amazing time. I was there for that first game. I write a section in the book, probably about a 6 or 7 page section, about the whole backstory and Penn State joining the conference, how that came about, and the ramifications of that. That was a huge, huge, when you look at the last 30 years of the Big Ten, I mean, that was a huge turning point. Really changed the conference significantly. I think it was a great addition. Led to Nebraska. You can argue about Maryland and Rutgers. I think Maryland obviously has a great basketball team. But it really changed the face of the Big Ten. That was huge.
If I recall the story correctly, at least from my point of view with the people I've talked to over the years, they essentially had to convince Northwestern they weren't going to be kicked out to get, and they so they would vote yes.
You know, I haven't heard that version of the story. You know, and that's, you know, so that, and that, you know, there's obviously a lot of different stories. I knew it was hardly a slam dunk. They admit, and he talks in the book, that they could have handled it better. They kind of did this without, you know, basically said, without really incorporating the athletic directors. And there was a huge outcry from the athletic directors. Bo Schembechler, who was the athletic director
right.
at Michigan, was vehemently against it. And But they got, you know, they got it done. I think Stanley Eikenberry, formerly of Penn State, University of Illinois presence, really wanted it. And he's, you know, I talked to him for this in the book. He's actually writes another piece in the book. You know, obviously it was very controversial at the time, but it was a huge addition to the Big Ten. And obviously it was the right move and the best move at the time. And it's just a seismic move. And here's another thing to consider. What's it been now, 29 years now since they joined?
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, there's a whole generation of people who don't know anything else but Penn State being in the Big Ten. I mean, it's 29 years. And it's an incredible amount of period of time and a lot of great history that they've been able to accomplish in the Big Ten.
Back in the early days, obviously Red Grange in the 20s has to be a part of this. Jesse Owens has to be a part of this. When you write about the history of the Big Ten, what do these figures not only mean to the Big Ten being the brand it is today, but what did they mean to the advancement of sports in this country to make it the obsession it is today?
So here's probably, I think, my favorite stat in of everything that I saw. If you remember, at the end of the 20th century, ESPN did this Sports Century series where they voted the top 50 athletes of the 20th century. Five of the top 33, not even five of the top 50, five of the top 33 had Big Ten connections. And let me go through this list for you. Jesse Owens, I think, was sixth. Jack Nicklaus was ninth. Magic Johnson was, I think, 17th. Red Grange was in the 20s. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact figure. And Mark Spitz was 33. So five athletes, and you talk about, these are athletes who have endured for generations. I just went down to Champaign. They just did a symposium with the students. They had 400 kids from the sports business program. We did a symposium on Red Grange. It's almost been 100 years since Red Grange last carried a football in Champaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and that legacy carries on. And obviously, Red Grange was the first superstar football player in college sports, and he became, in the 20s, he was as big as Babe Ruth and Jack Dempsey and Bobby Jones in golf. I mean, he was an icon back then. Jesse Owens, I mean, I don't think we need to, you know, everyone knows the story of Jesse Owens, although they don't know the Big Ten story of Jesse Owens.
Right.
You know, they talk about what he did at Berlin was great, but he, in the 1935 Big Ten track meet,
yes,
he set four world records, not just four world records in one day, four world records in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. You know, I write about that, and his daughter did a contribution in the book. Another one of my great favorite stats, Jack Nicklaus at Ohio State, he won the Big Ten tournament, I want to say 1961. He won it by 23 shots. I mean, I can't even wrap my arms around 23 shots. You know, maybe, I mean, I feel like I was in the field, you know, and I think, you know, can you imagine 23 shots? And the great thing was that they qualified, they won the title by one shot. So
they needed all the shots.
Isn't that amazing? And so I write about the icons. I have a section about the icons. I have a section about I tried to do storytelling. I didn't want it to be like a Wikipedia type thing. So there's 300 photos in the book, but there's also 80,000 words of type. If people get the book, be warned, it's a heavy book. It's 352 pages, and it weighs about 5 pounds. I think it's a great-looking book. We got a lot of great photos that kind of also we wanted to try to tell the vibe of the Big Ten through some photos, and so we kind of use these photos to kind of break up the sections and talk, you know, to just really show what the fans like, the experience, what it's like to be a champion, to celebrate. We had some great – I have one of my favorite pictures is a two-page women's Penn State women's volleyball winning one of their titles. One of the women in the center is jumping up, you know, like about as high as the net, you know, and the expression on her face is amazing. So we didn't get everything in the book, you know, it wasn't all the news that fits to print, but I think we tried to get the feel of what this conference has been like, and you know, and I hopefully, you know, people, there's something, I tried to make something for everyone. There's a Penn State four-page Penn State section in the book. We do a story on the great success of the Penn State wrestling program in the 2010s. So that, again, we tried to get, as I say, there's something on every on your school and on every school. So hopefully people I'm really excited for people to see this book and to kind of see the tradition of the conference and see where their school kind of contributed and fit in the conference.
This conference is in the financial shape it is today, in part because of what Jim Delaney has done. If you're a commissioner, people are going to be able to take shots at you and anything you do.
Right,
I don't care if you're Adam Silver or Jim Delaney. But there's realism to it. You're not getting $54, $55 million a year unless this guy's negotiated his brains out to get there. And he almost got Notre Dame to come in, too, in 1999. What did it mean to you that he ended up writing the foreword to the book?
Well, I mean, the Big Ten published the books. You know, initially that wasn't going to be the case,
and they
were engaged from the beginning. Initially, it was going to be myself or someone else publishing, and then I think the more they got into it, the more they decided that they wanted to be the publisher, since it was going to be a book on the history of the Big Ten. I first approached them on this in 2017. And went to Jim and went to a couple of his associates, high-ranking associates, and I said, this is what I want to do. There really hasn't been a book written about the Big Ten in almost 30 years. Obviously, it covers his tenure. And they were all in from the beginning. Not only were they all in, but I was overwhelmed by the amount of support I got from them and the interest and how enthusiastic they were about the project. I just recently had a book party at the Big Ten, basically to thank all these people. You know, I said we have to drink a toast to this book and to thank all these people who really were so vested in this project and really wanted to do well. And so Jim was all in. I've known Jim. I was there from day one with Jim, 1989. Yep. And we still have a relationship, and we still get to play golf a couple times a year, once or twice a year. And he's a fun guy to play golf, very competitive. And one of my favorite pictures in the book is that there's a cover, a 1969 Sporting News cover of Rick Mount. Well, Rick Mount's on the cover, but the guy guarding him is Jim Delaney, North Carolina. Yep. Is that amazing? And I said, we got to run this cover in the book. And then we do a section on Rick Mount and a story on Rick Mount, who was a great player and, you know, obviously probably the best shooter in Big Ten history. Oh. And we ran the cover, you know, and it's just the coincidence of that is stunning.
One last question, because I know you have to go. One of the famous moments that opened the door for everybody to get to bowl games in the Big Ten was the 1973 Ohio State-Michigan
right.
game, obviously. Before then, only the Big Ten champion went to a bowl game.
How'd and not even that. It? And even if there was a repeat, they wouldn't let the repeat team go. So someone else had to go.
Right, somebody else had to go.
The kids to be out of school 2 years in a row.
Yeah, couldn't go back-to-back. How was it to tell that part of the story? Because they're still, obviously, the players are all still alive, but the coaches aren't.
Yeah, I think the fun part of that, and again, to show you how the Big Ten was invested in this book, I do a section in the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry and how I think that defines the conference, because it's the biggest rivalry, and it from that 10-year series, and it's really been the conference of Woody and Bo ever since, Woody and Bo wouldn't recognize the game now with the scores that are, you know, the last two couple, Michigan and Ohio State, they would be, they're definitely rolling, I did a tweet on, they're definitely rolling over in their graves. But it's still, I mean, you watch that game, and, you know, when you talk about the Big Ten, that's the conference of Woody and Bo, you know, and so that 1973 game, for people who don't know, that it finished in a 10-10 tie, so they were tied, I think, 9-0-1, both of them, and so who's going to the Rose Bowl? That time, only one team went to a bowl game, and they did a vote of the athletic directors, and Ohio State won 6-4. And Bo was just beside himself, considering Ohio State had gone the year before, and he felt like they were being punished because late in the game their starting quarterback Dennis Franklin broke his collarbone, and I think he felt like that cost them, because maybe the athletic directors felt without Franklin that they would not fare well against USC at the time. And so the Big Ten, you know, I said, I want to write about this, and Mark Redner, who's the associate commissioner, says, oh, we still have the letters that we received, the angry letters. And he gets me a file, you know, huge file, you know, foot deep of all these letters. So I kind of go through these letters, and we reprint some of the letters in the book in that section. So that was kind of a way of telling that story through people being angry. And, you know, people were comparing this to Watergate. I mean, you know, back in the 70s, how this was kind of an atrocity at the level of Watergate and stuff. And the Michigan fans were upset, and probably rightfully so.
I know we have to let you go. This book is, I think it's a must, especially during the holiday season. I'm thrilled that you're the one that got a chance to do it, because I know that you'd tell the story right. So, Ed, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time, and
anytime,
best of luck with
us. Please give me a call if you guys wanted to talk about anything else college sports. I'm always there. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ed Sherman, one of the best in the business, and the right choice to write a book like that on the history of the Big Ten. Our thanks to interim head basketball coach Jim Ferry for joining us today. Our thanks to men's ice hockey coach Guy Gadowski for joining us today. And our thanks to head football coach James Franklin, who joined us today. You can check it all out on the Steve Jones Show podcast. Of course, this is Thanksgiving weekend, and we talked earlier about giving thanks. And when you've done this show now, this is the 9th Thanksgiving weekend we've done this show, and heading into our 10th year at the beginning of February, can't thank you enough. We can't thank the sponsors enough, whether it's Purdy Insurance, obviously Sunbury Motors, Brewers Outlet. We can't thank them enough, plus all the other sponsors that we have along the way. We can't thank them, and most especially, we can't thank you enough. This doesn't happen unless you're interested in what we're talking about, and hopefully we give you as many interesting shows as possible. We can't thank you enough. You're the greatest. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Q Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Ann Arbor on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.